wow, wig it out, wig it out, wow, wow, wig it out, wig it out, wow, wow, wig it out.
I think what's become clear is that everybody views the reports and indications of preparations for a missile test with grave concern. We all agree that it would be any launch would be a provocation, that it is inconsistent with commitments North Korea has made regarding a moratorium on testing, commitments that have been restated time and again over the past couple of years, and that were most recently, I think, reflected in the September agreement at the six-party talks. So the message, I think, has been delivered loud and clear, and we look forward to North Korea.
The president arrived in Vienna at dusk, beginning a whirlwind visit to two European capitals in 3 days. In Austria, whose leader is the current president of the European Union, Bush has a day of talks with EU leaders at a Habsburg palace in the city center. Topping the agenda, Iran's nuclear program. The allies have joined Washington in offering talks and incentives if Iran suspends uranium enrichment. Tehran is skeptical but has not issued a flat-out rejection.
They're clearly considering the proposal. It's clearly taking them some time. They've made some indications that they're taking it seriously.
The question is, will the Europeans hold firm for sanctions if Iran won't halt a program Bush thinks is to build a bomb? Bush will also press the Europeans to aid Iraq's fledgling democracy. Some $13 billion has been pledged by U.S. allies, but less than $4 billion arrived. The other stop on Bush's trip is Budapest, where he'll mark the 50th anniversary of Hungary's anti-communist uprising, brutally crushed by the Soviets. Bush thinks that blood-soaked memory makes Hungarians value freedom and explains why they sent troops to Iraq.
But it's Iraq that overshadows this 15th visit by the president to a Europe still deeply distrustful of how he's waging the war on terror. Once again, anti-war protests await him here. And as the president flew to Vienna, he learned the details of the horrific deaths of two captured U.S. soldiers in Iraq. Mark Smith, The Associated Press, Vienna.
And that's a commercial. So that's three news segments in a row with no commercials. Way to go, Yahoo. Well done. This is John. I'm joined by Maria, and it's the Tuesday Kill Radio News. And I don't know. Any mic? Let's see. Whichever one looks least damaged from the party that was obviously here the other night. Let's see. No, that one's not on. Here. Here you go.
There's been a party at Kill Radio, and I was not invited.
I'm kidding. I'm just basing it on cigarette butts and beer caps.
Oh, Heineken, huh? Well, that's not an American company. So
I know.
They're not supporting the troops, are they?
It's unpatriotic to drink German beer. You have to drink crappy American beer.
Right, crappy beer. Crappy American beer.
I like Japanese products. They need to make more beer. Well, they do make beer. They have...
Sake?
Asahi.
Sake.
Yeah.
Sake.
Sapporo. Kirin. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh.
It's one of those days. Anything happen in the world today? Oh, let's do the Iraq body count.
Oh, Iraq body count.
Yay, Iraq body count for today. Oh, by the way, did you hear about the soldiers that they found? Oh, God, it's so horrible. Yesterday, it was they had Condoleezza Rice doing a press conference, and she was talking about...
Condoleezza Rice?
Ah, that's good. She's talking about the... these soldiers that had gone missing in Iraq, and then she was, I guess, demonstrating to us how upset she was by telling us how upset she was. But at that point, they didn't know, you know, where they were or what was up. And then apparently in the news today, they found them, and in a bad way.
Oh, and how many soldiers were there?
I think it was a little, it was like two or three, and they found them like booby-trapped or something.
Oh,
something
good.
Awful. I'll pull up an article later. We can read it.
Was this a response to the Haditha?
You know...
Probably not.
You know,
that was a while ago.
Is this a response to the war on terrorism?
Right.
I mean, like, who knows?
Right.
You know, soldiers are, you know, soldiers die. That's one of the things that soldiers do. And in this case, when we're in this, I hate using the word, but quagmire,
right.
Things like this are going to happen. Somebody was talking, I wish I could remember where I heard this, but it was, you know, you hear that argument, it's better to have the war over there than fight, you know, better to fight on their turf than on ours. You hear that argument a lot, and people who are defending the war are like, oh, we're taking the war to them so that we don't have to fight it here.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And somebody brought up a really good point the other day, which was, this was actually, I saw this on C-SPAN. This was actually a Republican who said this too. And he said, that may be true, but there are instances where taking a war over there actually makes it more likely that there will be fighting over here. You know, which is the truth. I mean, people use the argument that we're somehow making ourselves safer by starting a war somewhere else instead of allowing it to happen here is really nonsense, because by starting a war somewhere else, you're basically inviting people to come attack us.
Exactly. And it's not even a legal war. And we're attacking a country that never attacked us. So we're just creating an enemy that we didn't really have before. And there's so many reasons not to be involved in this war. Well, but why do you suppose so many Democrats were for it, like Hillary Clinton, for example?
I think two things. One, I think Democrats are, by and large, kind of phony and foolish. And they're going to side with what makes them look the most patriotic. And in a world run by the media, the way it is, I think that they want to keep their votes, and they don't want to take any risks, which is why as an opposition party they're rather silly. But I think the other thing is, though, they were largely lied to in Congress. They were given, think about it, if you and I are basing our opinion on the war on evidence that we got from reading newspaper articles and stuff like that, I mean, those are trickle-down facts. You know, we barely heard anything. The stuff that the Bush administration was telling Congress before we went to war, these out-and-out lies, things about, unmanned aerial drones armed with chemicals and all these horrible things. We have pictures and things like that. And I think there were probably a fair amount of Democrats who honestly believe that, hey, you know, there's no way they'd lie about this stuff. Not a lie that big.
So you think that they were really misinformed, that they're not just, you know, bad guys pretending to be good guys, that they just really were misinformed of...
I wouldn't say all of them one way or another, but mm-hmm. I would say at least some of them mm-hmm. who are generally anti-war minded people mm-hmm. were essentially making a decision based on bad information. Mm-hmm. And also the decision, nobody actually really voted to go to war. The vote was to allow the president to be able to decide whether or not we go to war, which is a ridiculous thing to vote on. And I don't, but somehow they were suckered into doing it, and I think they were suckered into doing it through these scare tactics. Right. Oh, look, we have a picture of, you know, Saddam Hussein, you know, and he's mm-hmm. pointing at this target, and it says USA on it, and here's proof of this, that, and the other thing. And none of these things really exist, but, mm-hmm. I mean, we were all lied to, the public, but I guarantee that the Congress was lied to more than we were, because we don't even hear what they say.
Let me ask you, what do you think of Hillary Clinton? Because I'm hearing so many mixed things about her. I'm supposedly, first of all, I heard she was against the COPE bill, which is good, because that means she was for internet neutrality and freedom of speech on the internet and public access. And I heard something about her proposing a bill of rights for privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about that?
I've heard her talk about it. I'm not well versed in it, but I've heard her mention it.
Is she a good guy or a bad guy? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, you know, you're either with us or against us. It's part of the problem is, you know, there aren't so much anymore good guys or bad guys. Mm-hmm. Well, no, there are bad guys, but...
are there good guys?
Well, I mean, you know, it's like I'm not going to agree with everything someone believes in because they're not me. Hillary Clinton, I've never been a big fan of Hillary Clinton. Every time I've seen her speak, on the news or at C-SPAN or something like that, she seems very much like a politician to me, like someone who is going to go with whatever she thinks is going to win her the most votes, whether or not it's the right thing to do. I think in some cases she's more pro-war and more conservative than I am. I'm not necessarily saying I should be in government. Maybe I'm too liberal to be in government. I don't know. You know, I would support someone like Dennis Kucinich over Hillary Clinton any day. But, you know, on the other side, you know, she's amazing. You know, she's smart. She's talented. She's come a long way. You know, she's earned the right to be someone I don't really like. I mean, you know.
Well, when Bill Clinton was president, though, I thought she was quite liberal. She seemed to be for women's rights, and she was for children's rights, mm-hmm. and just seemed that she was for rights.
Yeah, and I'm for rights, and that's good. So, I mean, yeah. I mean, she's a liberal Democrat, if you can label it that way, but, you know, maybe I'm a leftist. I don't know.
But do liberal Democrats vote for wars? That's what confuses me.
Yeah.
So I wonder, who is Hillary Clinton?
Well, but, you know, she's also very, 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 very rich.
Right.
You know, as are a lot of liberal Democrats. I mean, you know, Al Gore's family has, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of stock in Occidental Petroleum, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which is oil that comes from Colombia, where there is, you know, has the worst human rights record in the Americas. And, you know, I've heard it argued before that if he were to have become president, it's uh-huh. entirely possible we'd be at war there.
Really? And how does that factor in with his trying to get us aware of global warming? Because there's some people who are saying the global warming thing is a scam.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So, but, I mean, I don't know. It's hard for me to believe that it's a scam. I don't think. But, you know,
well, these people also think evolution is a scam, so.
Well, yeah, I mean, so.
You don't, the thing is, you don't need proof for something to be true. You don't need proof right in front of you to be reality.
Right. Do we have a phone call?
Well, we have a phone ringing. We'll see.
We have a phone ringing. The mysterious caller.
Kill Radio.
Let's find out who this is.
Is this Paul? Is this Chicken Leather?
Chicken Leather.
Hey, you want to go on the air?
We have Chicken Leather on the phone, but he's not on the air yet. He's sending a secret message to John.
I can't hear you, Paul. I'm actually on the air right now.
And
do you want me to put you on, or do you want to call back?
We can't tell you what the message is. It's top secret.
Okay, cool. Okay, bye.
So
no idea. I couldn't hear him. He's gonna call me back in 5 minutes, and maybe we'll set up a video to play or something like that.
Okay.
And then I'll talk to him then. Anyway,
well, what I was wondering, like, if Al Gore, if he has a stake in oil, does it somehow benefit him? Does it benefit him or not benefit him for us to believe that global warming is a problem? Because
I
noticed that the global warming issue, there are people saying that to prevent global warming, that we should have changes in emission standards and stuff like that. So I'm just wondering how that affects him if he has a
vested
interest.
Right. I'm not saying that I subscribe to the theory that Al Gore is oil hungry or anything like that. All I'm saying is rich people have to fend for themselves. They want to keep their money. And wherever their money is invested is where they're going to put their priorities. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that makes the Democrats in Congress just a little bit shady when it comes to whether or not they're liberal or not. They're liberal so far as it doesn't interfere with their ability to stay rich. That's what I believe.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm just wondering, though, does it benefit him somehow, the global warming issue, or just would it not benefit him? That's what I'm trying
to
figure out.
It's easy to say that something like an inconvenient truth is some sort of political thing.
Uh-huh.
It may just be something he believes in, you know?
Yeah.
It may just be something that's unfortunate and inconvenient and true. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm kind of reserving. I haven't seen the film yet, so.
Yeah, because I know a few years ago, reportedly, from what I understand, Al Gore was for the government revealing its finances, its financial records. So that was a good thing that he was doing. He was trying to get the government to be more honest about how much money the government had. And, of course, now the government's hiding it from us.
Mm.
But he did do some good things. And I know he's written about environmental issues in the past. So this isn't, like, a new thing for him.
Yeah, no, he's always been known as an environmentalist. Exactly. And when he ran in 2000, thought that he wasn't liberal enough. I can't tell you specifically why at the moment, but I remember reading about him going,
not enough.
Not good enough.
Yeah, I was just wondering where the question comes in about his global warming issues, like where people are getting that from. You know, because I mean, Alex Jones, of course, like someone who I listen to a lot, I follow him a lot, and I have a lot of respect for him. And he believes that the global warming thing is a scam. And I'm just wondering where his reasoning is coming from.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
there, you know, there must be some.
Like, anybody can. I think anybody can see that weather is getting worse.
Right.
I don't know what's causing it. Mm-hmm. I tend to believe what scientists say.
Yeah.
Even if I can't prove it. Mm-hmm. Because so far, they haven't made any, like, huge blunders that have really interfered in my life. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm pretty much willing to leave it up to people smarter than me, or at least people who have studied mm-hmm. what's going on, mm-hmm. to tell me what's going on when it comes to something like the environment.
Right.
You know, sure, maybe there isn't a hole in the ozone layer, you know, or wasn't or whatever. Mm-hmm. How do I know? I don't really care. But if someone tells me that there is and that there's something I can do to prevent it or mm-hmm. to make it, you know, not as bad, then I'll listen to that.
Yeah. And I guess, yeah, I mean, what I'm thinking, too, is why would someone make something like that up? Because it doesn't seem like there'd be any benefit to him for us to believe that global warming exists if it doesn't, you know.
Well, the only benefit really would be a political benefit. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Al Gore, the guy that saved us from the polar ice caps melting, you know, and right. we should vote for him because he made this mm-hmm. documentary. That's the only way I could see that he'd be right. getting something out of it.
Because it would seem to me that the oil companies, if first of all, George Bush doesn't want to believe in global warming. Now there's a tip off right there.
Yeah, doesn't want to believe in evolution and doesn't want to believe in human rights, women's rights, gay rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of things that are right in front of him. Like, he keeps calling the war in Iraq a success.
Right.
But it's still happening.
But I guess for him it's a success because people are getting killed, and apparently that's what he's looking for.
He keeps talking about all the progress that we're making and all the progress that we've made. And then when someone says, yeah, but what about, you know, all these people that blew up the other day, and goes, oh, well, you know, Iraq's a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. Well, which is it? Is it a dangerous place or has it made progress? Because it was dangerous before the war. Mm-hmm. So you'd think if we were making progress, it would be less dangerous.
Right. And I mean, there are so many people who are saying that the life is worse for people in Iraq now than it was under Saddam Hussein, which is not a good thing for us Americans. It doesn't
It's shocking
make us look
to
good.
Even imagine that, how life could be worse for right. them than it was under Saddam Hussein, because I don't think anybody, any serious person, would argue that it wasn't horrible under Saddam Hussein. Right. That just had nothing to do with why we went to war there.
Right. But,
so,
yeah.
I mean, life is horrible in a lot of places.
That is true.
Like this pissing contest we're having right now with North Korea. We're not going to go to war with North Korea. Mm-hmm. They actually have weapons.
Right.
Plus, leader of North Korea is fucking insane. You don't want to mess with a guy like that. He doesn't care if we blow up North Korea and kill everybody there. He does not care. He's going to launch this missile just to annoy us.
Right. And this is where, you know, this is where the stupidity of the war in Iraq comes in. I mean, we're not fighting the real enemies, are we? We're not fighting people who really pose a threat to us. So, yeah. You know.
I mean, it's like if we were going to try to rid the world of Birkenstocks, you would think you'd start in Berkeley, you know? Instead, it's like starting that, you know, in Delaware or something, you know. It's like pick, oh well, but it's in the United States and it's part of our global attack on Birkenstocks.
Right. Well, you know, I do want to point out about George Bush is he does believe in equal rights for wealthy people, and he has done a lot to help the rich. So I guess we can congratulate him for that. The rich
are
doing really well.
He's not a bad politician because he knows who his constituents are. In fact, this latest news, I'll see if I can pull up an article about further anti-gay legislation. Even the religious right are now accusing him of pandering to them. If you can imagine that.
Stop
saying,
pandering to
this
us.
Is obviously just a political move to win our vote back. He doesn't really hate gays like we hate gays. We want him to really hate them. These are the God Hates Fags.com people.
Oh. Is there a site?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Let me do the body count before I get sidetracked. This from IraqBodyCount.net. What is today's date anyway? June 20th. Oh, it's 6/20 on 6/20.
It's 6/20.
Let's see. Civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, minimum 38,475, maximum 42,889. So jumped up just a few hundred since last week.
So the war has been a success.
It's been a success for him.
People have been killed.
He's still in power.
Can I read some tidbits of information, random tidbits?
I love tidbits.
Well, do you know Bill Frist?
Do I know Bill Frist?
Great guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's my pediatrician.
Oh, he is?
He's my doctor. I have him diagnose me from Washington.
Oh.
And then he just sends me prayers, and I get better.
And
like he did with Terri Schiavo.
Poor old
he diagnosed
Terri
her
Schiavo.
From watching the video.
Oh,
do you remember? Do you remember that? He determined that she was not in a vegetative state because he saw it on TV.
Well, you know, I mean, her parents actually wrote a book too. So I mean, there is that side of the story. You know, her parents did not want the life support removed, and her husband did, and there was a big controversy over.
Yeah,
it.
No, so I mean that was a complicated issue. Her parents were extremely religious people. They had their own beliefs. Her husband. Mm-hmm. Was someone who believed strongly that he should do what he believed she wanted, which he claims she told him she wanted.
But her parents seem to allege that he might have abused her or may have even caused her
condition.
Well,
yeah, but of course they were also attacking him to win their case. And I'm sure he probably accused them of things that were not true. I mean, like, I don't know, the reality of that issue, of that controversy is so different from what the actual debate was about.
Right.
I mean, when the government started to get involved and everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, Bill Frist is a prick. What's your story?
Oh, yeah. Well, more reasons not to like Bill Frist. Congressman from Tennessee, right? He's from Tennessee, I believe.
Yes.
Very, very wealthy man. And he's a doctor. And you're a doctor.
So he claims.
In his book, this I got from the Huffington Post. In his book that he wrote called Transplant, he wrote that he used to, when he was in medical school, adopt cats from shelters and keep them as pets for a little while, then have them killed and used for medical research experiments.
Wow.
and then he apparently he later commented that he felt a certain kind of power when he held a dying dog and felt the dog's last heartbeats. It gave him a sense of power.
Wow.
Now, if you read on psychology as I do, that's the kind of thing that a serial killer or a sociopath would say.
Yeah.
And that's pretty scary. And he's someone who could write about this in a book or talk about this publicly.
And he's such a hate-filled person, too. I mean, when you hear him speak about civil rights and things like gay marriage, I mean, he's just so full of venom. This doesn't surprise me. Do you want
chicken leather?
I can either play a video that I have from Truth Out, or you could read an article. I'm going to take this call.
Go ahead and, take
I'll
the call.
Back.
Verizon is launching a chaperone cell phone with a GPS device so that people can track their kids. Now, that's a little creepy, bit of a violation of privacy there. I suppose some people probably feel that they're safe. Being able to monitor their kids that way, but that can lead to a lot of abuse, having a phone that can track, that can be used to track people's whereabouts constantly. John's on a phone call at the moment, so while he's on the phone call, I'm going to read a little bit about Bilderberg. They just had a conference a week and a half ago, and the Bilderberg Group meets every year. They meet either in North America or Europe. And some of the most powerful people in the world get together and meet at this conference. Now, it has been thought of as a conspiracy theory because these folks were meeting in secret. But it's not a conspiracy theory. And actually, the media is starting to pick it up. and starting to write articles about it. And recently, commentator Alex Jones, whose website is www.infowars.com, infowars.com, he went to Bilderberg to cover it. I know we talked about this last week, but there's more information. Alex Jones went to Canada, to Ottawa, Canada, to cover this conference. And he was stopped and he was detained for about 15 hours. They confiscated his camera equipment and his computer when he crossed the border in Canada. And they actually searched his computer. They threatened him. They tried to get him to say something that could implicate him in something. They tried to find an excuse to arrest him, basically. They didn't let him go until the media apparently showed up, and they were embarrassed and afraid of this getting publicized, which it did get publicized. And again, you can get the information by checking www.infowars.com. But I just want to mention that this Bilderberg group does meet every year. And once again, it's leaders from countries, but not just leaders of countries, prime ministers, kings or queens or presidents of countries, but also CEOs of big businesses, corporations, bankers. So it's a merge of big businesses. Do you have someone you want to put on the phone? Chicken Leather?
I have DJ Chicken Leather with some late breaking news about the
farmers.
Well, it's not late or breaking. You know what? He wants to tell us about his experience the past day or so. Can we just put him on for a bit?
Sure. Okay. Here comes Chicken Leather.
You know, it doesn't have to be that way.
It is that way already.
You're killing me. Actually, I spent most of last week with the plight of the South Central farmers, trying to be as non-biased as I could, trying to cover all the angles on it. But you can't help but feel that they're in this struggle, that they are somewhat just kind of in a conundrum of who or what they're going to be doing next. Their fate is in a couple of other people's hands. It'd be one thing if it was like, oh, we just have to worry about the farm, we just have to worry about this. But if you look at the history, it's for the last 15 years they've been fighting everything from being given the land, and then a fight with the food bank across the street. And then finally the food bank said, oh, just keep the land. And so they thought that was it. And then to find out that, in fact, that the land that was deemed to them, apparently because they didn't build anything on it or make improvements, reverted back to the owner. And this is news to them. But then apparently, I guess, 2-3 years ago in some deal, the owner bought the land back. Now, I've been told that... they could, in fact, the mayor, Mayor Villaraigosa, could actually use some public domain kind of thing, take it by eminent domain and make it a public place again. And by that way, they sort of be... I'm trying to watch the game in this. Let me just preface this and say that... there's a lot of things going on with them that...
Is there still hope?
I'm sorry?
Is there still hope?
There is still hope. That's the thing. They're actually camping out on the sidewalk, and I know that sounds like, oh, my God, people do that when they don't have homes. Well, in fact...
Or if a Star Wars movie comes out.
Yeah. As you know, last week they were kicked out of their house, more or less, the farm that they were living on. But they haven't left, and in fact, there were about 200 to 300 supporters last Tuesday, and again on Wednesday and Thursday, a number of supporters came out. The Korean community came out. Some farmers from Seoul came and talked, and then on Thursday, they actually had some of the people that were arrested actually led the procession. And while I haven't been there in the last 2 or 3 days. The energy was high. I was at a city hearing, and they've been going to all the city council meetings for the last 3 years. So on Friday, they went down there and demanded. But the thing I've been wondering about is, and it's something I don't think anybody has even talked about, it's like after the initial raid on the farm by the sheriffs, they brought in some bulldozers. Now, those bulldozers were not sheriff-issue bulldozers or city-issue. They were brought in by Mr. Horowitz, and I'm just wondering what he thought he was going to do with these things. They used them only to get to the tree and get those people out, but they were there, and apparently they went on a bit of a joyride around the farm. Now,
just an intimidation technique?
Have to demolish this or demo this place. He needs permits and stuff, just like anything else. So he may have tried to, subjugate some sort of play that if he, plowed under the farm before their hearing on the 15th of July, there wouldn't be any point to it because it'd be a moot point. There wouldn't be any farm left. So I think that's what they fear. And in fact, there are some injunctions against that and the walnut tree that's protected, I guess, by a federal mandate, so they can't chop that tree down. So, and in fact, parts of the farm are saved, if only a tree here or a bit of land there. So, anyway, that's what's going on.
Well, good. Well, thanks for keeping us updated. Blackwater
Psychic wants to add one last thing here.
Okay.
And you could do something every night. There's a vigil at 7 o'clock, and all you have to do is bring your candle, and then they leave it on the side of Alameda. And then they have a whole thing where they walk around the whole farm, and then you leave off your candle, And they always have entertainment. They always have people playing there. And they
What's the website for that, for people to get that information? Isn't there a website where people can get the address, where to go?
Yeah, it's is it the farm? So it's South Central Farm. .com.
Okay.
I tried Googling it once, and it gave you a lot of entries.
Okay.
So.
Okay, Black Woman Sidekick, thanks for the info.
All right, here. Do you want chicken leather again?
No, God, no.
Okay.
Thanks.
No more chicken leather.
All right, well, thanks, Johnny.
Take care, chicken leather. Thanks for the update.
Great job there with the news, and give my best to you. I hope that you've worked out the key situation this time, and hopefully have a reporter there when we call in for the next time. And
good.
Just to let all your basketball friends know, unless they're parked in front of a TV set, that Dallas is playing in their hometown. It's game six. It's a must-win for them, and it's they put a run on Miami right now, and they're up by about 10 or 11 points. So,
good. I've been meaning to put some sports into this show.
Yeah, we always have to inject it because you look at it as, I mean, the World Cup, too. Everybody is just getting on to the fact that the world is there, and they only think about the sports things. But if you look at it, any kind of sports team or whatever brings a tremendous amount of economy to the area. And in fact, that's the argument that Villaraigosa is saying when he says he wants to spend $80 million on a football team but can't spend an eighth of that or, a tenth of that on a farm in South Central. So,
yeah.
Your priorities are definitely in different places, but I think it's still for the main good. And I think that's one of the other arguments he's been making. On the same day that he could have come down and stopped all the violence, he was actually dedicating a 1,000-room hotel next to the Staples Center. So you can argue where and where the message would have been lost if he was at one point.
Chicken Leather, I think our phone is dying. I'm having trouble hearing you.
I'm going to let you guys go. Kill Radio.
All right, Kill Radio.
Bye.
Take care.
And if anyone else wants to call,
don't call for a little while. Let our phone charge.
Yeah, let our phone charge.
It's getting quieter and quieter and quieter. I think the point he was trying to make, which was made previously about the fact that these farmers are being evicted in the middle of World Cup when there would be maybe a little less public resistance because people are home with their families. And like Chomsky always says, if people treated politics like they did sports, then we live in a much more equitable society.
Because
I watch C-SPAN, and it's like you follow this character and that character, and you follow their careers, and you see if they win the bill or not.
But then again, we can sort of blame the media in part for that, because the media is not really informing us. And if they did inform us, I mean, if you could turn on your TV and hear about your local representative or senator, and get an interview with them and be able to see them.
Well, there's no
basis.
Reward for being informed. They want to reward you for being misinformed,
right.
So that you go and you spend more money on burgers and
and
Coca-Cola and oil.
How can we change that? Maybe a television should be something people should have to pay for. You know, to watch television. That would might discourage people from watching too much TV. And
no, because like you could never make something like television something you have to pay for, because that's not what the advertisers want. Like, the television is fueled by advertising. Shows aren't there to tell stories. Shows are there to fill in the gaps between commercials.
Right.
So let's say there was some sort of law where you had to pay for TV. The advertiser would simply just find another way to get their commercials into your home, in front of your face, for free. Mm-hmm. It's worth the money for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they make more by you consuming their products than they spend advertising the products, obviously, or they wouldn't do it.
Oh, there has to be a solution in here somewhere.
Internet radio, baby. Yeah. I'm sorry.
The Cope bill. Yeah.
I cut you off in the middle of your discussion there.
Oh, well, I was talking about the Bilderberg conference. It's this is more national, international news, so it's sort of unrelated to the local news. But the Bilderberg conference, it was thought of as a conspiracy theory because the mainstream media hasn't been reporting on it. But increasingly, the mainstream media has started to report on it. So more and more people are starting to realize that it does exist. And basically, what is it? It's a conference that meets every year, and it's leaders of countries, prime ministers, presidents, queens, kings, plus bankers and people who run banks and people who run big businesses and people who run the media. And they all get together and meet and have these secret conferences. And it's what's creepy about it is just that they make these decisions in secret, and that, you know, so many people don't even know it exists at all. And yet they're making
creepy
decisions that, you know, and it's just politicians together with bankers and with mass media and corporations all getting together. And some of the people who've attended, the Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, Richard Holbrooke, the head of the Federal Reserve, head of the Federal Reserve in New York, the editor of the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, the founding CEO of America Online.
Wow.
A director of a private office of NATO, the CEO of Royal Bank of Canada, New York Governor Pataki, the CEO of Indigo Books and Music, the managing director of Kissinger Associates, the CEO of Credit Suisse, First Boston. The point is, like, why are all these those people getting together and making plans as to how the world is going to be run? And when Alex Jones infiltrated it a week and a half ago when they met in Ottawa and to report on it, and he said one of the things they were discussing was Hugo Chavez and what to do about Hugo Chavez. So basically bankers.
When to assassinate him.
Yeah. Bankers, CEOs, media executives and our leaders of countries are getting together to decide what to do with Hugo Chavez. That to me is pretty sinister.
Yeah, well, it's scary to think about who actually makes the decisions. Like, who really decided to go to war in Iraq? Was it the decider? I don't think so.
Right.
You know, he may have been the guy to sign the paperwork, but, you know, it was businessmen that decided, basically.
And why should we allow bankers and CEOs of big corporations decide how our world is going to be run? And those people, I mean, obviously, they're not thinking about our best interest. And a lot of those people probably don't even know much about politics or what the consequences can be of their actions. They're just thinking greed, money. And
I think that's one of the things we were talking before about how, you know, how do you decide if you like a politician, if they're liberal enough or whatever. One of the things that I look at, one of the things that's most important to me anyway, is, you know, what is their stance on foreign policy? What are they... How do they think the United States should deal with other countries and interact with them, and what do they think about Palestinian rights, and what do they think about Israeli rights, and what do they think about Colombia, and so on and so forth, you know. And I found that the politicians rarely really talk about foreign policy when they're campaigning. I mean, they might say things about nation building, and you know, they speak in sort of generalities. But for the most part, and this includes the Democrats, they don't seem to have any sort of firm belief in cooperation. And maybe it's just me being naive, but I don't know. I was talking to someone this over the weekend about how we're raised from day one to see ourselves as being a part of a clique, a group, a culture, a country, a religion. Ours is the best one. It's us, and then there's everybody else. Right. And we should either hate the infidels for not being like us, or pity them for not being able to be like us. But regardless, we're the best.
Of course we're going to think we're the best, though.
But, I mean, that's a philosophy, though. I mean, I don't know that that's natural. I mean, I guess it must be natural since it's the way it's always been. But it seems a rather flawed philosophy that, you know, I'm supposed to be proud of being an American because I was born here, mm-hmm. not because I had any involvement whatsoever in the development of America or, you know, or coming here or anything like that. Just like, you know, see people like, oh, I'm Spanish and we're the best because we're from Spain or something. You know, and it's like, right. What did you do to get that other than just be in Spain at the time that you said that?
Right. But on a, if you looked at it from a different perspective of I'm proud to be an American because we have our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and we have more freedoms than people do in China.
Yeah, but see, that's exactly my point. It's like we come up with all these reasons to back up our pre-statement that we're the best. Mm-hmm. Like we have all these rights. Mm-hmm. But we don't really have any rights that someone in, you know, Denmark doesn't have. You know, sure, we have more rights than someone in China. But that's China. You know what I mean? Right. It's not like...
I wouldn't mind living in Denmark, actually. If I could work there, I'd go there. I'll go there tomorrow.
Well, I'm sure Denmark has its problems, too. And the Danish probably think that they're the best, and they pity all the other cultures for not being as Danish as them.
Yeah, but I mean, if you like where you are, aren't you going to feel proud of it?
Yeah, I think you can have pride...
I love Kill Radio. I'm a part of Kill Radio.
Right. And you can have pride in that without espousing the philosophy that you're the best. Because power is not hierarchical, mm-hmm. if that's a word. You know, it's not just because it exists doesn't mean that it's better or worse than something else. It could just exist side by side with it. You know.
Yeah, but what if you really like if you look at like for example if you were to look at other countries and say well their quality of life isn't as good as ours and you know we have so many more resources and life is so much better here. I think this is the best country.
But that's politics.
That's still politics? I mean, yeah. Isn't it kind of like if you, I don't know, like...
You can say, hey, this is great, you know? But that doesn't mean, I mean, that doesn't mean from day one you should be teaching your kids that it's the best. It's us and them. You're either with us or you're with the terrorists. So that's where that idea comes from, is that... Instead of being on a planet full of people that eat a variety of foods and speak a variety of languages and practice a variety of religions, we're really a planet run by a bunch of violent gangs, you know, and my gang is the best gang. And I just think that mentality, that gang mentality, which is something that we can't avoid. I mean, it's something you start practicing when you're like 3 years old, when you sort of, you know, first start learning how to read. My religion is the best religion. Everybody wishes they could be as cool as me, you know? And I just, I don't know. I bring into question that entire philosophy. I don't know.
Well, if anyone has any answers, please call the station.
Yes,
now.
Please call in 213-252-0998. And check the stream seats.
And tell us what your religion is.
And why it's better.
And did you hear about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? He wrote an article in the Rolling Stone magazine, and he is planning a lawsuit against Diebold and the other voting machine companies. He's going to sue them because he's found evidence of thousands and thousands of votes that were switched, deliberately switched. These are people who voted against Bush, but their vote was automatically, through the electronic machine, switched to Bush.
I've heard of this. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's evidence. This is not, you know, just speculation. He's gotten evidence of it, and he said that there were like several different things that they did. It wasn't just switching people's votes, but there were people's votes who were thrown away, or people who were like their voting location was moved to another location and they didn't know it, or people who were made to stand in long lines. Only Democrats, though. Only people who were.
It's been demonstrated that you can actually hack into the Diebold machines and program them in such a way that for every, you know, X number of votes, a double vote goes to a certain candidate. Mm-hmm. You know, something like for every 10 votes for the Democratic candidate, an extra one will, you know, so like it counts all the Republican votes. Mm-hmm. Plus for every 10 Democratic votes, an extra vote for a Republican or something like that.
Okay.
That it can be, mathematically, it can be programmed to do that. Mm-hmm. And with no paper trail.
Right, exactly. No
paper
trail.
It's like going
trail.
To Vegas and playing blackjack on the computer blackjack, and they tell me that I just lost $20. But it's like, right. How do I know that that was a fair draw?
Right. And he said that, you know, when in looking at all the you know, if you wanted to call them mistakes, it always went in favor of George Bush. So you can't say that it was just an error. I mean, obviously, it was deliberately... This was deliberately done to swing the vote. So he believes that the last two elections were fixed. And he's actually looking for... I think it, people can probably reach him through his website, ringoffireradio.com. And if anyone has had the experience of having their vote tampered with, they could write to him because he really wants to launch this lawsuit. I don't know whether he started it yet or not, but he has been talking about it, and he did get one I mean, I'm sure he's heard from a lot of people, but he mentioned one woman who wrote in and said that her husband went to vote, and he went to vote and he looked away for a second. When he looked back, he saw his vote switched to George Bush. He actually saw it switch.
Wow. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. But I think it's really, this is very, they're very good news, because if he wins that lawsuit, we can get pushed back to paper ballots and perhaps get, you know, some of our democracy back anyway.
The PR firms were very good at what they did in 2000. After it was pretty much decided that Bush was the president, even though it was pretty much decided that he didn't get the votes. Mm-hmm. They were so good at pushing the idea that if you continue to challenge the legitimacy of the presidency, then you're unpatriotic. Hmm. Then you're the enemy. And not only that, but you're also crazy and stupid and a conspiracy theorist and all that stuff.
Right.
So when we got to 2004 and we literally had computerized machines made by Republicans... You know, there was a little bit of an outcry, but there wasn't any kind of mass, mm-hmm. you know, protest or demonstration. And I think it's, you know, I've heard from many different sources, read many different articles suggesting that 2004 was just plain fixed. None of this, you know, faulty felony registration things, you mm-hmm. know, none of this intimidation at the polls. We're talking about straight up screwing with the numbers.
Right.
And yeah. Still, I haven't heard anybody on national TV talk about it.
Right. You know? I mean, I have to admit, like, I'm one of those people who I believe there's a conspiracy behind September 11th. I think there was a conspiracy to kill John Lennon. I think there was a conspiracy to kill John F. Kennedy. I'm starting to believe almost all the conspiracy theories. But I didn't believe that the votes were fixed at first when I first heard about it. I thought, well, you know...
it's too absurd to be true. This is America. This is the best country in the world. That's exactly my point.
No, but I mean, it wasn't just that. It was just, you know, I mean, I just thought, well, a lot of people voted for Bush. I don't know why they voted for him. But, you know, I mean, it just, you know, every media report I looked at, you know, was saying people voted for George Bush. And I mean,
and it's true. A lot of people did vote for George Bush. And the only way, I think the only way a Democrat can ever win the presidency again, ever, is if the Republicans win first, and then it's found out that the votes that they got were so much less than the votes of the Democrats. Because if it's close, you just say, oh, conspiracy theorists, blah, 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 sour grapes or whatever you call it. But if we can make it so that really, you know, the polls represent the approval rating, for example, if he gets 30% of the, you know, of the vote, and the Democrat gets 60-something percent of the vote, then, you know.
But actually, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he responded to that, and he said he really found thousands and thousands of votes that have been changed. So he said it looks really clear that, you know, that the votes were fixed, and no matter how many people really vote a certain way, they can just switch them. So,
you know, what's interesting is, you know, it would seem to me, just philosophically, that if one vote is tampered with, is switched and from one direction or another, even if it doesn't affect the outcome of the election, the whole thing should be scrapped.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing is illegitimate. But we really don't have that mentality here. The mentality here is, if 1,000 votes are faulty, it doesn't matter because there's millions of votes.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think part of it, too, is we can't trust our media anymore, with the exception of Kill Radio.
Yes.
We can't.
And Amy Goodman. Cool.
Right. Okay, she cool. yeah, and you can go to alternative news sources on the internet, too. But mainstream media, your network television and radio, I mean, in newspapers, you can't trust them anymore. They're just all owned by this handful of corporations. So how do you know what to believe? It's really, I mean, if they told you 90% of Americans voted for George Bush, how would you know it's not true?
Yeah.
How could we know? Without, as you said, without a paper trail, we have no choice but to just believe what we're told. How would you really know who people voted for? Even if you meet a lot of people who said that they didn't vote for Bush, those could, yeah, I mean, you don't really know who the majority of Americans voted for.
Yeah, and in both elections, particularly I think the 2000 election, but I think also in 2004, there was this huge discrepancy between the votes and the exit polls. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, who'd you vote for? You know, and it didn't seem to match up.
Right. And there's so much that was done that was criminal, you know, sending those Washington aides to Florida to bang on the doors and start shouting and start a riot to prevent the recount of the votes. And, you know, things like that, I mean, tactics like that the Republicans have resorted to. It's just so criminal to me. I don't know why people aren't outraged by it.
Did you follow the debate the other day? There was, I think it was sometime last week, there was a 10-hour debate in the House over a bill to essentially a bill that essentially said the opinion of the House of Representatives is that the war is good, that there is no need to set an arbitrary date for withdrawal of the troops. And then there were like a series of amendments that included, you know, congratulating the new Iraqi government and patting on the back of this, that, and the other person. And they debated this for 10 hours straight, of which I watched, I think, maybe 4 hours.
Oh, that must have been exciting.
It wasn't bad. It was kind of fun. I hadn't done that in a while. Last time I watched that much C-SPAN straight was the big filibuster thing last year.
That was on C-SPAN?
Yeah.
You said?
And, it's really shocking because the Republicans were always saying, you know, this is our war on terror and this war is very important, and setting an arbitrary date for withdrawal is leaving without finishing the job, and the job has to be done, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, it would go back to the Democrats, and the Democrat would bring it up and say, you know, I read this resolution from cover to finish, and it actually doesn't mention Osama bin Laden anywhere. So what is this war on terrorism we keep hearing about?
Right.
You know, what's going on here? Why are we wasting valuable time talking about whether or not to vote on a resolution to say that the war is good when the war is obviously a complete disaster and has right. nothing to do with the people who attacked us on 9/11?
Exactly. You know, it just gets more and more bizarre with each passing day, it seems.
We must be the crazy ones, right? Because everybody else is, like, fine.
You know, I had a dream last night.
Oh, and here it comes. Here's the good part. This is the Kill Radio News part that you really...
Yeah, this is news. You have to know about my dreams. It's very strange. I was at a conference, something like the Bilderberg conference, actually, and all these wealthy, powerful people were meeting. And I was standing on top of some sort of pedestal, and I was screaming, "You've got to help the poor. You must help the poor people of your countries. All of you, you must do this. It's very important, or your countries will fall apart." And some people from some European countries, I think it might have been Sweden or Denmark, I'm not sure, kind of took me aside, and they were very impressed with my speech, and they wanted me to take me back to Europe with them.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, well, those Europeans, they really...
oh, that's funny.
They're much more liberal than...
Wow, that's much more politically significant than my dream.
Oh, what was your dream?
My head was a candy bar, and birds were eating it. I have it all the time.
Oh, no. Well, you have that same dream? Oh, gosh, that's not good.
So we only have a few more minutes. Do you have any last words before the FBI comes and takes you away to Sweden?
Sure. Well, I'd like to plug my show. I have a public access show. It's showing next Monday, the 26th, at 11:30 p.m. on Adelphia Public Access Channel 77 in Santa Monica, Channel 98 in Los Angeles.
That's cool. What do you do on the show?
Well, it's called the Catty Open Mic Show, and I dress as a cat.
It's called the what?
The Catty Open Mic Show, and I'm dressed as a cat, and I have like a few singer-songwriters on who mm-hmm. perform. And
so it's an entertainment show? It's not a political show?
Oh, it's not political at all, no. Not at all political.
You need to take a break every once in a while,
yeah,
huh?
Definitely. It's not a... I'm sure George Bush wouldn't like it, though, if he saw it, so I don't think he'd like it.
What kind of artists and musicians do you have on there?
Well, I have a singer-songwriter named Ileana, and then a couple of other singer-songwriters, Christopher Lucas and Abe Quigley, just sang some songs. And then there's a couple of comedy skits in there, so it's kind of like Saturday Night Live or something like
that. Is there anything like a website or an email address so people can get more information on the show? Or do you send out a newsletter or something? How often do you do it?
We only do it once every 2 or 3 months.
Oh.
Because it's through public access, which may get eliminated thanks to the Cope bill. But,
wow. How did you get this show? How did you put it together? I
went to public access and inquired on it, and I just had the idea for doing like a sort of a comedy open mic. It's supposed to be like an open mic, but it's kind of a, you know, obviously it's a joke. But
right.
The performances are real. And... I don't know. It's a way of my expressing my anger because I dress as a cat and I'm catty with all the guests.
I
make silly remarks at people, and it's kind of my anger that comes out. You know?
It's a scripted show or an improv show?
It's a little bit of both. I wrote a script for it, but everybody just kind of improvises off the script. So,
bastards.
Yeah.
So this is 11:30. You said?
Yes, 11:30.
Monday.
Yes. So if anyone stays up that late and gets,
and it's only on Adelphia cable.
Yes, it's only on, as far as I know, yeah, Adelphia, throughout Los Angeles and Santa Monica, and Beverly Hills, for all our listeners in Beverly Hills.
Well, cool. People should check that out, especially since it's only every couple of months. So.
Right. And since it may get eliminated, thanks to the Cope bill.
Yeah.
There may never be another, who knows. But, it's just a funny little show. It's a shameless plug, but.
Nah, that's cool. You know. Catty Open Mic Show.
Yeah, catty, for catty people.
Check it out. Is that it for today?
So,
I don't think there's any more news. I think we covered everything.
I can read from the Constitution. Can I read from something from the Constitution?
Constitution? What's that?
It's this document that used to be valid in the United States before George Bush became president.
Right. That's
And it used to guarantee us certain rights.
Right, but now it's mostly for keeping gays from marrying, right?
Yeah, and allowing torture and people to be held without habeas corpus.
Yeah, I've heard of the Constitution. That's right. I've heard of that. Yeah.
Oh, a Supreme Court ruling recently. I don't know if you heard about it. Enables the police to just break into your house without any notice.
I did hear about that. I did hear about that.
Yet another violation of our constitutional rights. Well, I just wanted to mention that there's some interesting stuff in our Constitution. Article 3, Section 3, treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. In case anyone thinks that they might know of someone who's committed treason, like someone in the White House, for example.
Wow.
Section 4, Article 2. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors.
That's a good reason.
Yep.
Yeah, one more quote for us.
One more quote? Sure. I shall read the First Amendment. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Enough said. That was the Kill Radio Tuesday News with John and Maria. We'll be back next week.
And thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.